existed between myself and this kindly and distinguished old man. I could not believe that he had committed suicide, yet that had been the verdict of the inquest, a report of which I was shown in a coffee bar on my way back to the office that yellow October day. I was feeling particularly unenthusiastic about going back that morning. I hadn't had a holiday for 18 months and 9 days. I felt stale, mentally, physically and spiritually, from the roots of my hair to my toenails. Furthermore, I had just had 6 sweating weeks under the still-hot Italian sun, trailing around after a fat, greasy ball of brain, brawn and energy that added up to the great Italian film director, Niccolò Grandi. The purpose of the operation being to provide the magazine I worked for with one of those exclusive features on famous people at work that readers are supposed to revel in. As such assignments go, it had not been by any means the toughest, despite the sun and the inevitable exhaustion. Grandi, shorn of his protective layers of publicity personnel, had proved to be quite a fellow, and there was nothing phony about his genius. I'm not a film man. The printed word is my business, but I have learned to recognise the true artist in any medium when I see him or her, and Grandi was certainly that. I could have almost enjoyed the chore, except for the lack of holiday. Which was why, the day after my return to London, instead of taking a taxi straight to the office, I took time out to wander down Piccadilly on foot and stop for a coffee en route. I drifted into one of those plush bars, much frequented by press-suited executives and their secretaries, and had barely sat down with my first cup and my morning paper when I heard a voice I knew. It was a chap called Bill Adamson, chief pundit of a steel industry journal, whose offices were above a beauty parlour just round the corner. He made the usual jocular remarks aimed by those jealous members of the fraternity whose boundaries of research are in the main confined to the suburbs of Sheffield and Doncaster. Then he slapped his morning paper down on the table beside me and said, "You knew this chap, didn't you?" I looked vaguely over the front page, and he jabbed a finger at a point down towards the bottom of the second column. It took me a full minute to assimilate the dry heading. Maurice de Couvel, suicide verdict. And I had to use a considerable effort of will to clear my brain sufficiently to read through the brief report that followed. When I had finished, I read it through a second time, slowly. At the inquest on Monsieur Maurice Edmond de Couvel, the distinguished French historian, held at Port Hilaire on the island of Laroc yesterday, the jury returned a verdict of suicide, while the balance of mind was disturbed. 71-year-old Monsieur de Couvel, steward of Laroc, was found dead with gunshot wounds at his island home, Saint-Michel, a week ago. An old-fashioned revolver with his initials carved on the ivory handle was found beside him. On a desk nearby was a letter addressed to his son and daughter. Monsieur de Couvel was said to have been extremely depressed since his wife's death after a long illness 2 years previously. His son, Monsieur Alain de Couvel, told the court that his father had shut up the family home shortly afterwards and had not, to his knowledge, entered it again until the day after the tragedy. He agreed that his father had suffered acute depression for a considerable time, and stated that neither he nor his sister, Madame Simone Corlander, had any doubt that the letter found on their father's desk after his death had been a suicide note. When the court closed, Monsieur Guy Lamanet, President of the Island Assembly, the Laroc Parliament, paid tribute to the late Monsieur de Couvel's services to the island and spoke of the lasting pleasure and illumination he had given to the students of history. At the foot of the column, an editor's note read, "An appreciation of the work of Maurice de Couvel by his fellow historian, John Cumminge, appears on page 8. I was hardly aware that Bill Adamson had sat down opposite me. It was as though a door had opened and I was looking through it down a long tunnel into my own remote boyhood. I could see the gardens at Saint-Michel and the plantations stretching away beyond on all sides, and the giant catalpa tree on the broad lawn in front of the house. In my ears was the sound of the sea, mingling with the hum of insects. The feeling of those far-off days was strong within me, a feeling of security in a tight, closed world in which time was in abeyance, the true and rightful feeling of childhood. I was torn from it by a reality that jarred." "Did you know about it?" With an effort, I shifted my gaze to Adamson's face. "No," I said.